The information and opinions presented in this ARC Energy Ideas podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are subject to the disclaimer link in the show notes.
This is the ARC Energy Ideas podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back. So, Jackie, it's been 9 months, I think, since you've had your EV.
Yeah, and we've really tried to use it for everything. Remember I said we started out, it was going to be our only family vehicle.
How'd that go?
So, yeah, I mean, we used it for skiing this winter, although we had to change our pattern. We could only really get to 2 ski hills with it because of the infrastructure wasn't there for us to get to other ski hills outside
like
of Lake Louise and Sunshine.
Like Lake Louise.
We could get to Lake Louise and Sunshine, but we couldn't get to like Kicking Horse or Fernie in the winter because you lose some of the range. You could do it in the summer, possibly to Kicking Horse, but not to Fernie. The other thing is on the summer holiday, we chose to take road trips along Highway 1 because the Trans-Canada Highway is the only place that really has infrastructure in Canada that you can use your electric car. So as long as you're willing to only stick to the destinations on the Highway 1, it works pretty well. Unfortunately, this summer, because of all the fires and everything, we decided we didn't want to stick only to the Highway 1. That's where the EV became a problem because we couldn't get to places like Jasper or some other places that we wanted to go. So confession is we did end up buying a combustion engine vehicle. So now we have the EV, which I love to drive. And I will prefer to drive the EV if we can. But if we're going to a place where we don't have the infrastructure, then we have that alternative. Yeah. So that was kind of sad that we had to do that. But I do believe the cars are there. I think
it's
they're great.
It's the charging infrastructure.
It's the charging infrastructure. And so I want to talk about the charging infrastructure in Canada and how much it needs to change if we're going to achieve these goals like the Liberals have set out, like by 2035, 100% of new cars will be EVs. Well, we have a long way to go in Canada because the average person is not going to put up with some of the stuff I've put up with. And, you know, a lot of people that are with the EVs, they put up with a lot and they adjust their lifestyles.
Yeah.
But most people aren't going to be willing to do that.
If you are like me and keeping your EV driving dominantly to within the city or, say, a Canmore radius, it's perfectly fine and it works. But if you go off the beaten path, like you do a lot more than I do, then, yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, there's big places in the province
and
of Alberta.
This is a huge country, a huge province. There's a lot of roads that you cannot go without running out of electricity.
Yeah, like most of them. So we'll talk about that. I mean, this podcast is really, and I've written a commentary as well, which we'll post to the show notes to try to create more awareness of this issue. Because I think Canada has to have a plan. It's going to be a huge undertaking to create the infrastructure that we're going to need. So let's talk about that. But first, I thought we'd talk about sales of EVs.
Sure, yeah.
And globally, percent of new car sales right now in 2021 are estimated to be around 4.5% of all new cars are fully electric and plug-in hybrids, like the Teslas where they only run on the battery, but also those cars that can run on electricity for 30 or 40 miles. In some markets, though, it's much higher. Like in Europe, the major markets in Europe are about 10% of new car sales. And there's some individual countries in Europe that are even higher, like Norway, greater than 70%. Sweden at 30%.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, Norway heavily subsidized, right? And by the way, I had a friend in Norway that I spoke to, it's probably a couple of years ago before the pandemic. I said, so how's it going? And he said, great, but sort of winked and said, I also have a combustion engine vehicles because like you Canadians, we go out to our country cottage and we need to have that as well. So if you're buying it as a second vehicle to motor around your commuting radius, fantastic. But the minute you step out of that commuting radius, it's a bit more of a commitment.
Well, until that infrastructure gets there.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I think we need to go on a trip to Iceland, Peter, since you're an international traveler. Well, they're at 50%. So I'm interested to sort of understand what they're a cold country too, but what the infrastructure looks like there, what they've done to get their sales numbers that high.
Yeah, I've been there. I mean, and Iceland runs on geothermal, and it's a wonderful place to visit. The capital, Reykjavik, would be ideal for it. I mean, yeah, you wouldn't be able to go all the way around the island, I guess, but if they have charging infrastructure at the various villages, it's just not a big population place, and they're concentrated in coastal villages, so I don't think it would be a problem there.
Yeah.
It's not like Canada, where it's just huge.
Yeah, that is one of our challenges. Interestingly enough, China is expected to be about 12% of the sales this year. So new car sales, 12% of them in China. So we got a couple of markets, Europe and China, in that range. Canada's at 4% about, and the US is about half of that on an annual basis. I understand the most recent sales numbers are a little bit higher in the US for the last few months.
Yep.
But we're well behind in terms of where Europe and China are.
And Tesla's still the market leader. I mean, it sold almost 250,000 vehicles in the last quarter. It's really amazing.
Yeah, especially in North America. You know, the Tesla is the vast majority of the cars on the road. And that actually gets to sort of the commentary and the situation in North America as well, because we have one maker who's just got the vast majority of cars on the road. That's important to consider. And if you go to places like China, you don't really have that as much.
Yep.
You have more diversity. Okay, so Canada and the US, so although both countries are behind, both of our leaders, for Biden, for the US, he wants to get EVs to reach 40 to 50% of new car sales by 2030. So that's going to be a fast acceleration. And of course, Canada, we want to get all the way to 100% by 2035. So obviously, there's going to have to be a lot done here in North America to see that growth from where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not just about the car. As you know, Peter, it's about a whole system. You know, car can work great, which I think it does today, but you need the whole system to create that ramp up in demand for
and it's
these
not
cars.
Just the whole system. There's characteristics of the system that we are going to talk about, because not every charging station is the same.
Yeah, so let's get in some background about charging. You know, I think it's important background because I didn't know any of this. Whenever you drive by something, you say, oh, there's a charger. You think they're all equal. Well, there's actually three different levels of chargers. Level three is the fast chargers. Those are the only ones I care about when I'm driving outside of my house. And that's basically these ones. Now, they really range. They're not all equal. But in Canada, we have ones that range from 50 kilowatt to 350 kilowatt. So to put that in perspective, the average home consumes about 1 kilowatt. An air conditioning unit consumes about 3 or 4. So these fast chargers can put the amount of electricity into your car that's, you know, 50 times the average consumption of a home on the low end, up to 350 on the high end.
So this is really, you know, you got to think of it in terms of electrical current and relating it back to the fuel pump. The level three chargers are like gas pumps that put a lot of gas into your tank very quickly. The level one chargers are like trying to fill your gas tank with a syringe.
Yeah, right? You don't want to do that.
Like, it just takes forever. And I don't think the analogy is far off, because if you want to charge at a level one, like, what is a level one? It's like your 110 plugging it into the wall. I mean, it's going to take you, what does it take for a car? I've never done it.
Oh, like 20 hours. I mean, you get about 4 kilowatts of flow rate there versus the 50 to 350 you would get at a fast charger.
So I think it would probably take you 20 hours if you were trying to fill your gas tank with a syringe.
Yeah.
Maybe even less.
Yeah. This might be a straw, the level two. So level two is what most people put in their homes. That's a 220-volt plug. So this might be like your home dryer, your hot tub, or your stove. We all have those types of plug-ins. And that can charge in a home around 7 to 11 kilowatts. So you'll see these often at hotels as well.
Yeah.
But they're not practical if you're not staying the night, because it would take you 7 or so hours to fill a battery, depending on where you are when you start.
Yeah, what do you get? I mean, I typically get a little more than a kilometer a minute, if you want to put it in terms of kilometers of range.
So you definitely wouldn't want to be sitting on the side of the road waiting for that, right? That would only make sense if you were planning to stop for the evening or you're at home. So I think what's important is a lot of people just think all chargers are equal. They see chargers at hotels and they think that's great. But the reality is only a subset of those chargers are going to allow you to get on the road for a big road trip and have flexibility like you do today with gasoline. Okay, the other thing to be aware of, and I wasn't aware of this, is that different manufacturers take different approaches to filling the battery. So some manufacturers will fill the battery at a very high rate, and that's good because it will take you a lot less time to charge. Some manufacturers limit the charge rate. So for example, the Tesla, I have actually had as much as 222 kilowatts coming into my battery at one time. That's my record.
That's a huge hose, yeah.
With the Blueberry Express. We call our car the Blueberry Express. What do you call yours, Peter? Have you named it?
No, I haven't gotten to that level of affinity yet.
Oh, we have to name it on the app. Okay. You probably just call it Peter's car or something.
Yeah, that's
true. So Blueberry Express, that's the highest. Now, the Tesla chargers go up to 250. So I think the other thing is when your battery is at its very lowest, it will accept the highest rate of charge. And then as it fills, it tapers down how much it will take. So I might be able to, when it's 10 to 30% full, I can get really high, like over 200 kilowatts. But after that, it starts to drift down to maybe only 50 by the time I'm almost full.
I mean, if you charge these things too quickly all the way through the full, I'll call it the duty cycle of the battery, you can damage the battery, especially if you do it too often. So they optimize how you fill the battery.
Exactly. I think it's, someone said to me, it's like blowing on a balloon. You know, at first there's not a lot of back pressure, but the more you blow, and if you put in too much when it gets full, it can damage the battery. However, that is a problem because some of the manufacturers are being overly cautious with that. And so, for example, the Chevy Bolt, which has made some news because its batteries are going on fire, but that car only limits you to fast charging at 55 kilowatts. Whoa, that's like a
level
two,
right?
Well, that would be the very low end of level three, the 50 kilowatts. But what I could do in 20 minutes, they're going to be over an hour doing the same thing.
Right.
So buyer beware here. I wouldn't have even known that. I'd go buy a Chevy Bolt and I'd say, well, 55 kilowatts sounds good. But actually, that car is not going to be very useful for long distance road trips because it limits the amount of energy coming in the battery. Now that protects your battery, but it also makes it a lot less useful for road trips.
Right.
So some manufacturers are really pushing the amount of charge into the battery so you can fast charge. Others are being really conservative. So I would just be really careful when you're looking at a car, if you plan to go on road trips, to make sure you're picking one of those manufacturers and prove it. I would take it to the charging station to prove you can actually fill it at a fast rate.
So this is poses the issue of building out the charging infrastructure, especially into rural areas, because people want the option of being able to take their vehicle to campgrounds, to ski resorts and other places that are not necessarily off the main highways. So really, you need a good number of level three chargers in a lot of these places before people will accept it.
Well, and I would say it's not even for on the road. I think we need level three chargers throughout our cities because there's lots of people that won't have the luxury of a garage that they can put the 220 in or they have a garage at all. And those people, I think the model, and we're seeing this in China, is that you're going to drive up to the equivalent of a gas station today, somewhere in the inner city, and you're going to sit there for 20 minutes and you're going to get there when your battery's quite low. So for instance, if I get there when my battery's quite low, in 15 minutes, I can have a lot of charge.
Right.
I don't fill it all the way and then I'm good probably for the good part of the week. But if we don't have those, we're going to see, you know, a lot of people not adopt the electric car, even for inner city driving.
Yeah.
So I think that is a big thing. The other thing I think that matters from that knowledge that the cars bring on a lot of charge when they're low is that you never really want to fill them up fully. The better model is to stop frequently for 15 minutes, take advantage of it when it fills very fast, and when it starts slowing down, off you go until you're low again.
There's a sort of a filling strategy.
Yeah, so really, I think you're better off to stop frequently for 12 minutes or something, or 15 minutes, versus a couple of times on a trip, than one stop for 45 minutes that accomplishes the same thing. So this gets to the fact that we need very tight intervals on the roadways, because people are going to want to charge really frequently and not fully charge and have that security to know it's no big deal because in another 100 kilometers, or even in Europe, they're actually talking about 60 kilometers being the longest interval between fast chargers.
60, yeah.
Yeah, because if that existed, the adoption would take off because now you can charge very quickly, always have that security to know there's another station and another 60 kilometers.
So buy a cup of coffee every 60K, is that what you're saying?
Well, it's like 10 minutes, I don't know. Just do your emails, Peter. I don't know. Listen to iTunes, sing karaoke. There's so many things to do. So, you know, I think that's one of the takeaways I got from learning more about the infrastructure is how important it is that we get the tight infrastructure. And we're just not there yet. If you look at the infrastructure across the Trans-Canada, which is really the only road to travel in Canada, Tesla has the largest network by far along the Trans-Canada. And theirs goes off the Trans-Canada a little bit. And then Petro-Canada has across Canada fast charging network. And there are other companies that have fast chargers in different parts of the country, but not across.
So what if I want to go to Grand Prairie?
You just can't do it. Well, you would have to stay overnight in a hotel
and do the
multiple times with that level two. So there's lots of hotels, but I haven't even looked going to Grand Prairie. I'm not even sure there are hotels with level two.
So let's talk about standards because I mean, the Petro-Canada stations have charging stations, don't they?
Yeah.
Or is it just all across the Trans-Canada?
Well, Petro-Canada has a network, and so does Tesla. And like I said, there are other third parties, other charging groups along the Trans-Canada. The problem is, first of all, I wanted to talk a little bit about the gaps. We just talked about 60 kilometers would be ideal, or 100. At places, we have over a 250-kilometer gap between charging stations.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is too far, especially in the winter when the range of your car is cut by the cold weather. You know, in the summer, that's probably okay, but I wouldn't really want to drive across Canada in the winter because of that gap.
Yeah. So, there's just sort of the multitude of factors that we have to consider. So you got to increase, I'll call it the linear density of charging stations to a much tighter interval.
Yeah.
And in doing so, you also, I guess you sort of overcome one of the issues, which is everybody lining up at a superstation waiting for a stall. Because if you have greater intervals, then, you know, not everybody's going to stop every 60K. You're going to do it every...
Exactly. And you just have more chargers too. So that would be really helpful.
Right.
And people wouldn't have to fully charge, because that is the problem. Like, if people are always confident there'll be another charger, they're not going to spend that time getting fully charged, which takes way longer.
Right.
So that's one issue. But then the second issue is, or another issue is the plugs. Not all of these chargers that exist in these intervals are all available for every car. Because in Canada, and actually in North America, we have three different plug types for fast charging.
This is a ridiculous issue. I mean, imagine pulling into a hotel and it had European style plugs and you didn't have a converter and you didn't know it was going to be European or South African or whatever. Everybody's got different kind of plugs, right?
Yeah, like it's really crazy. Like, so the Tesla, which the vast majority of the cars on the road in North America today are Tesla, they have their own plug.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not even going to talk about level two. There's other types of plugs for level two. This is just level three, the fast charging.
Mm.
Crazy as it is, there's even different ones for that. But the Tesla has a certain plug that's available for both the level two and level three. However, any other car I buy, there's ones with this CHAdeMO connector. That's, and there's other ones with the one I'll call the CSS, but it actually has three different names. And that's slowly becoming the standard. So for me as a Tesla driver, you know, if I drive up to one of these third-party chargers, non-Tesla, I can't plug in unless I buy an adapter. But even then, the adapters are very hard to buy. First of all, Tesla does sell a CHAdeMO connector, although it says on their website they're not available anymore. And they're like close to $500.
So what's the, I know that this is an issue, for example, if you pull up to a Petro-Canada in a Tesla.
Yeah, so you would need to have, there's two kind of adapters you could have. One for CHAdeMO, which is $500, but it's not available. And one that some company in China is selling that's close to $1,000, which I can order on the internet. And I haven't done it myself, but people have videos that they have used them. But get this, not only do you spend that much money on an adapter, but that adapter throttles back the flow rate of electrons. So instead of charging
it... level three into level two, basically.
Well, it, it's not quite that bad, but instead of charging it over 200, like I was at the Tesla charger, I'm at 50. That's a problem. Like what I can achieve in 15 minutes will take me like an hour over at the Petro-Canada. And by the way, they charge me by time. So now the economics of driving my EV are even getting worse because, you know, the fill of the tank is maybe three or four times more money than it should be, because that machine there should be able to give me the electrons at a much faster pace, but this adapter is throttling back the electricity. And on top of that, sometimes those machines don't even work once you put the adapters on. I've seen lots of videos of people having issues once they have the adapter on, the machine can't see the car, and there's all sorts of problems that are created by all these different plugins.
Yeah, it's you know, the issue of standardization is huge, and there are those who say, well, let the free market determine the standard, you know, much as we saw with the whole classic beta versus VHS standard. Even you can take this back to the light bulb era of the late 1800s with Edison versus Westinghouse versus, there was actually 200 different kind of light bulb things. You know, the screw base eventually won out with the Edison screw base here in North America. So we're in a situation here where we're trying to accelerate adoption as quickly as possible, yet the standards are really a limiting factor here.
Oh, they really are. And by the way, in those two leading countries, Europe and China.
They're trying to standardize.
They already have standard plugs. So they have forced all the manufacturers to go with one plug.
Yeah.
And if you go in Europe, I've seen pictures of them, the Tesla chargers actually have two plugs. They have the Tesla one and the CSS one.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, where we need to get to here. It would facilitate much more adoption. You know, and back to your thing about the battling it out for supremacy, like the beta and the VHS. You know, maybe that's okay, but really the consumers usually lose from that because the people that bought the beta ended up having a stranded asset. And then on top of that, it took a lot longer by not having a standard for videos and all that stuff to kind of establish itself. You know, if we want to get to all electric in 10 years or less, or whatever, 20, 35, 14 years, we can't afford to waste 5 or 6 years wasting time with building infrastructure that only works for a small number of the cars that are on the road.
No, I think it's a huge issue because getting back to the beta, okay, you spend a few hundred bucks on a beta VHS and you use it and okay, it gets stranded. You typically, by that time, you're going to get a DVD player in the next generation. Here, the expectation is that your car retains some value, but if it has potentially a stranded plug that nobody's going to use anymore, then your car gets devalued thousands of dollars, and that's no good either. So I think this issue of the standards is one that is not well recognized. The issue not only of some non-standardized charging rates leads to a lot of potentially confusion to disappointment amongst EV buyers. Now, we haven't seen that yet because most of the people who buy EVs are what we would call, say, prosumers or lead adopters, you know, professional consumers.
They'll put up with a lot.
They'll put up with a lot, like you. But, you know, you started getting, if you want to get the adoption past a certain point, you have to get rid of these inconveniences. You know, so I can actually foresee that, yes, we're going to see the adoption rate of EVs go up relatively quickly, but they could prematurely peak at a certain level beyond which, so you get beyond that prosumer level where the people will just say, this is just too much of an inconvenience. I'll just stick with my combustion vehicle and I'm willing to pay the carbon tax because I know what I'm getting.
Well, and I think one thing that's happening in North America is because Tesla has this very large growing network and it's quite seamless to use the Tesla chargers, but they're getting a greater and greater market share. So a Tesla driver might say to me, well, what does it matter, Jackie? I'm never going to use Petro-Canada. They'll just use the Tesla charger. Well, the issue I have with that is they're never going to build a Tesla charger in Sundry. I went to visit my friend Jim, who I know listens to the podcast. Hmm. And, you know, are they going to build a Tesla charger there? No. So I was a little nervous about going there in the summer. I definitely wouldn't do that trip in the winter. So if I could use the third-party charger seamlessly and get a high rate through it, not with this adapter that chokes off the electrons, you would see more adoption of Teslas in all cars, but you'd also see the Tesla drivers have more utility.
Right.
Another issue this summer, you saw the lineups at some of the charging ports for Tesla because that is the dominant car on the market today. So why should we have a bunch of Teslas lining up for the Tesla chargers when there could be other chargers in town that would work for them that they could use?
Yep.
Another issue is we don't have a lot of those other types of chargers today because there aren't a lot of cars that can use them. But if we changed it so that all the Teslas could use those other chargers, there'd be a better business case to start putting in charging stations because there are more cars that can use them. So I think for the Tesla drivers, you know, at first they may say it doesn't matter, but actually I think having the access, seamless access to other chargers is going to create a lot more utility and build out the infrastructure and make your electric car a lot more useful.
Well, it's going to be interesting in the next 2 years as electric pickup trucks start to come out because it's going to be these vehicles that pull a trailer or a whole bunch of other recreational equipment into places like campgrounds and so on. And if there's no charging infrastructure at the lake or the campground or wherever people choose to go, we're not talking about a standard car battery now. We're talking about one that's 2 or 3 times the size.
Yeah, you're going to need to have those fast chargers out to these remote locations.
To fill up one of those is going to take a lot longer.
And you'll need really frequent charging stops because they're going to go through their battery a lot quicker. So we're going to need a lot more infrastructure. And by having one plug in, I think it's going to accelerate the adoption for all manufacturers, including Tesla. Hmm. Elon Musk has said that he is going to open up his chargers to other types of cars. However, he hasn't said that he's going to change the adapter here in North America so that he would allow for a CSS plug or one of these other plugs. And if he doesn't do that, to me, the barrier is still there. Like, so if you say, I'll open it up, but people have to go buy a adapter that throttles back the electrons, it's not going to be that useful to people.
So if a GM, let's say a Chevy Bolt, pulls into a Tesla and they have a Tesla to CSS or whatever adapter the Bolt uses, it's possible that that adapter is going to choke back the Tesla electrons. Is that right?
Well, that adapter doesn't exist today, first of all. Mm. So we'd have to, someone would have to make it. But, you know, my experience has been all of these adapters do throttle back the electrons. So I don't know for sure that this yet to be developed adapter will do that. But that's, to me, the big concern by that. If he doesn't do what's happened in Europe, where they just sort of have a direct connection from the charger to the right plug for that car, I'm not convinced that's going to solve the problem. I think the government needs to step in and say there's a standard, or I think it's still going to be quite clunky and inconvenient for consumers. So I think that needs to happen. And like I said, everyone wins. I think we're going to see a lot more charge points, because our real issue today is these non-Tesla charging points. There's not that many cars that use them. So half the time, they're not even working when you drive up to them. Like, I had a lot of experiences where it would say on the screen, system needs a reboot, or your credit card information wouldn't get accepted. Like, nobody's using these things. And so they're generally not being maintained. And so, again, I think if you could open them up so that all cars, including the Teslas, could go to them, they would be used more and hopefully be more reliable than what they are today as well.
So another way to think about it is that the adoption of electric vehicles will continue to grow quite nicely for those who use the vehicles largely for commuting, and people will do what you do for their longer, is that they'll have a combustion engine vehicle as their second vehicle in the garage to go on trips.
Yeah, but we're not going to get to our 2035 goal that way.
No, we're not.
We really need to do a lot more to plan for our infrastructure, like what Europe is doing now, in order to get a higher adoption.
Yeah, but Europe is, you know, Europe has population density. I mean, there's a town every 10 kilometers.
But I think it's even more important that we plan for it, because we're not that, right?
No, true.
Let's be realistic. This is going to take a lot of government money, a lot more than that's been promised with the Liberals' programs right now. There are many places in this country that private capital will not put a charging station in.
No, who's going to put the charging station into Sundry?
Exactly. There won't be enough business there. And it's a bit like the internet, the high-speed internet. Remember how, like, we got it to the major cities in Canada, but then the government money needed to come in to get it to some of these more remote locations? That's totally going to happen. And I think we need to start planning for that now. We need to spend a lot more. And you can't just look at how much Europe's spending per capita, or the U.S., for instance, is spending per capita, because I think we're going to have to spend a lot more, because we have, like, this massive country which needs infrastructure built all along it. And I think it's going to be more money per capita here than it will be other places. And especially because we're a cold country, we're going to need a tighter density, I believe, than what you're seeing in some of these warmer countries, because our battery ranges are not going to be as long in the winter.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm almost off my soapbox.
The devil's in the details, as I say, and it's going to be important to focus on these details of standardization, not only of the plug-in, but of the charging, the current, how fast you can charge, everything. And this type of information is going to have to be conveyed to the consumer, the average consumer, not the prosumer, the lead adopters, before we get the type of adoption rates that we need to hit these targets.
Yeah, for sure. My last point, if it's going to take a lot of government money to build out this infrastructure, those chargers better be available for every car. Like, I don't want our government spending money on all these chargers that only a small subset of the cars can use. Like, we need a standard, especially if it's going to take government money, which I believe it's going to take a lot of, so that these are a public service available to every electric car driver.
But there's an imperative here to get this thing done as soon as possible, because, as you said, what was the stat at the very beginning? Like 4% of all vehicles, that includes the plug-in hybrids, 2 or 3% of all vehicles sold is an electric, battery electric vehicle. We're starting to flood the roads with vehicles and plug-ins that just, as you say, may be stranded.
Yeah. The faster we get on this, the better, I think, because you're right. I wouldn't say it'd be totally stranded.
No,
you
not
can
stranded,
put adapters on and change it and things, but I think there's going to be new capital needed. And why don't we just set the standard early so that we don't waste precious capital? Because if the goal is to get onto electric cars as fast as possible, we don't want to have any wasted investments.
No. But I mean, there's a reality here, though, that just before we wrap up, that you're not going to convince Tesla to switch to a different kind of plug. And you're not probably going to convince GM to go to the Tesla plug. So how is this going to all play out? It's going to mean that the non-Tesla plugs are going to have to come with adapters that don't choke off the electrons and at least get some sense of order into this whole EV charging world that's emerging.
Well, I think the government has to do what they did in Europe, which is say, going forward, all charge points must accept this one standard and all cars must be able to use it. And so in the case of Tesla, they provided adapters right away. And now some of the cars actually directly have that particular plug-in.
So they have two plug-ins.
Yes.
One for the Tesla nozzle, I'll call it, and one for the non-Tesla nozzle, which is standardized. Actually, I saw that on a Nissan Leaf in my recent trip to the UK, where it had two. It had a CHAdeMO standard and it had the CSS standard.
Yeah. So basically manufacturers are being forced into that. And also they're saying that charging infrastructure is a public service and therefore you have to have the ability to support this standard. So, you know, the faster you do it, the better, because I think 5 years from now, you won't see that in the two chargers anymore in Europe. You'll just see the one that's become the standard. And this is where you do need governments, I think, because in the end, this is probably going to occur, but it will take 5 or 10 years versus having it done in maybe two or three short years if you have a government policy that mandates it.
Right.
With that, let's wrap it up. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.